Welcome to the American Security Council Protecting Our Freedoms podcast. The mission of the American Security Council is to educate and engage American citizens on national security matters, economic security matters, and the need for moral leadership in the United States of America. Please enjoy the podcast.
Welcome. I'm your host, Joy Vatrebeck, here at the American Security Council Foundation. And today we're going to be discussing law enforcement and their appropriate role in making sure justice is served to protect our freedoms. And here with me to discuss this today is Mr. Jay Kramer. Mr. Kramer is the former mayor of Vero Beach, Florida, and is also a former employee of the Department of Justice.
Yep. I had a slight stint with that for a couple of years. Yes.
Thank you. And before I turn this over to you to speak more on that, let me say, first of all, that the ASCF need your support to continue these podcasts and programs. Please check out all of our programs at www.ascf.us and also donate. We accept all major credit cards, PayPal, and even cryptocurrency. And with that being said, Mr. Kramer, would you tell us a little more about yourself and your background?
Well, interestingly enough, you mentioned that I was mayor, so I was involved in the local politics here in Vero Beach for about 6 years. I got involved in state politics with the Republican Party of Florida as the state committee man for 4 years. And currently I'm the chairman of Indian River County with the Republican Party. And gosh, we are hard at work, worked on several campaigns, including the last presidential. And we're actually gearing up for Virginia's race, and we'll be gearing up for DeSantis' race. Probably start that here this fall.
Well, you're a busy man. Well, on our last podcast, I talked to senior fellow Alan Dowd, and he stated in his article, we must promote, preserve, and defend law and order. And we both can agree to that, that law and order is needed, as we can see the problems that happened across Portland and Seattle and New York, and Minneapolis, and many other countries this past summer. However, some of those actions of law enforcement, including the FBI, have come under question by the American public. The excessive use of force, which we're currently witnessing as George Floyd trial continues and the questioning goes on. And some of the FBI probes, such as the Mueller investigation and the January 6th rally and Capitol break-in. After the rally, law enforcement have been reportedly approaching those who attended the rally, and we continue to hear about arrests that are being made. But in comparison, last summer and in many other incidents that have happened, we don't hear as much about them as we have the January 6th rally. So, Jay, in your opinion, what is the difference between the law enforcement's role last summer and then some of the other incidences versus this January 6th rally?
You know, if I had to put it succinctly and simply, the January 6th rally was a threat to the Democratic Party, whereas the other rallies or the other protests that you saw, you know, the attack on the federal building in Seattle, a lot of the Black Lives Matter riots, a lot of the other riots associated with police violence, they really did facilitate a goal of creating distress across the country. The January 6th was different because it was all of a sudden pointed at a different group. It was mainly a protest against the November election, of which we saw a number of irregularities. And, you know, we wanted to go up there, and I say we because I was up there, to support our 45th president. And, you know, we were there at the rally at the Ellipse. It was funny. I commented to my wife that, you know, you look at this group, and it's, you know, it's a lot of retirees, a lot of older people, and they're you know, immensely peaceful people. I mean, you know, if you want to throw that phrase out there, peaceful protest, this was it. I mean, you had people that were supposedly protesting, but they would go by the police and say, we appreciate your service. I mean, they were very kind. You know, they picked up the litter. You know, they stayed within the barriers. It was actually a pretty good event. We really enjoyed it. But it did... after the rally, all of a sudden, you know, things begin to take a funny turn. Mm. You know, we'd been to rallies before, but, you know, my first inkling that something was amiss was when we were driving home. I'd drive down Interstate 95, and then all of a sudden you see on the sign one of the billboards, you know, and the FBI logo, and, you know, did you see anybody that, you know, was at the January 6th rally? Mm. And once we saw that, we knew something was going on.
So you weren't aware of the whole Capitol break-in at the time that you were at the...
Oh, gosh, no. We, you know, it was kind of a funny thing. We had we were at the Washington Monument, okay, when we were listening to Trump's rally. And then after the Trump rally, we wanted to... we walked up towards the Capitol. I think we got close to the reflection pool, about as far as I got, but... you know, us being from Florida, we got cold and we turned around and went the other way. So we didn't even get close to the Capitol building. You know, once we started driving away, we realized that, you know, the mayor of Washington, D.C. put a curfew on the place and wanted to clear everybody out. And then we started hearing that things were happening at the Capitol. So we really didn't know anything that was going on at the Capitol until... We had left Washington, D.C.
And I heard that report, well, at least I read several reports of other people saying the same thing. They had no idea this riot was happening at the Capitol. They were there for the peaceful rally.
Well, absolutely. You know, if you looked at the timeline of the situation, if you were at the rally, the supposed break-in at the Capitol happened while people were at the rally. So all of the so-called nefarious activity was actually going on outside of the rally. So that had all started while we were still there at the Washington Monument. By the time, if we wanted to participate in the Capitol riot, so to speak, or the break-in, you know, that would have been all over by the time we would have gone up there. I mean, that's a pretty good hike to walk up there. Mm. A lot of the people, like I said, they're older, retired people, and they really weren't there for that kind of activity.
Yeah, that is a walk. I have been to a rally there on the Mall when Glenn Beck did his in 2010.
Yes.
And again, it was a very peaceful rally, and people were very respectful, picking up trash, as you mentioned. Now, there was talk, I have heard, of Antifa possibly being there and white supremacist groups possibly being there as well. And don't know if it was they were actually part of the Capitol break-in or not. What are your thoughts on Antifa as far as being a domestic terrorist threat?
Well, I think obviously they're a domestic terrorist threat because they have a goal, they have an agenda, and it's not peaceful. And it does, you know, the results of their action does, you know, end up in violence. It does end up in destruction of property. And they are very anti-government.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, when we were up there, we started to get... a sense that there were some things going on. We didn't know for sure, but you know, when we were getting closer to the Capitol, you know, I would see people with you know, riot gear, gas masks, and they would be walking fast towards the Capitol. You'd see groups of people with you know, no political affiliation on their being. I mean, most people had a, you know, Make America Great hat or a Trump pin or something right. like that attended the rally. But you were seeing people that were, you know, dressed in, you know, protective gear that didn't have any type of markings or anything like that. It started, you questioned it a little bit, but you made the assumption that they were there just in case something happened. You know, and we really didn't see anything that happened. But, you know, it was an interesting day, and I think after we had left, the pieces started to fall into place.
Mm-hmm. And what about the white supremacist groups? Do you think they're a domestic terrorist threat?
I really have not come across any white supremacy groups. Okay. I really haven't. I mean, you know, in all honesty, I've known a few people that are somewhat racist in their beliefs. They also happen to be, you know, nefarious towards other groups as well. It's just their being. But as far as an organized group, I've never seen it. I really have never seen it.
I've only read about them. And then one of my other questions is, do you believe they're being investigated in the same manner, Antifa and white supremacist groups?
No, I really don't. I think that leads over to the question, you know, is the FBI dealing fairly across the board with a lot of these incidences on the national stage? And I've got to say, from my experience, I mean, obviously they came and visited me at my home. My only involvement was the attendance of a rally.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, is the FBI going to, investigate the Antifa people, you know, the other mm-hmm. type of incidences that you're seeing? I'd mentioned earlier, the Kavanaugh hearings where they were trying to break into the Supreme Court hearings, the Seattle Federal Building, you know. Did they make an arrest there? You had a Seattle attorney general that would just, they'd bring people in, they'd refuse to make charges, and they'd send them back on mm-hmm. their way, and they'd commit more crimes. You know, these are things that, honestly, if I was a Trump supporter, if I did anything like that, we know that we'd get the book thrown at us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we know that we would really be persecuted for that kind of thing. But if you're an Antifa person, you're not charged and you're put back on the streets and you go back and you do it again. And so this duality leaves a great sense of frustration in our minds that law and order is not, it's supposed to be blind, it's supposed to treat everybody equally, mm-hmm. and it's not. It's not, and it's a worry.
Yeah, I definitely don't hear as much about the Kavanaugh break-in or the Seattle break-in as we have this January 6th Capitol break-in. Which in what you're saying is that it's not being maybe presented fairly, on both sides.
Well, I think the political agenda of the party in question has transcended into law enforcement. It used to be that, you'd see the battle between the political parties on the news, one would accuse the other. You'd have stories, you'd have demonstrations, things like that, which are something that we expect in a political scene. However, once you start using your position to influence law enforcement as a intimidation tool, mm-hmm. Now you've gone the next step. This is something beyond politics. Now this is something a little more dark and sinister.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I guess I would be concerned as well if FBI came to visit me after I was at a peaceful rally.
Well, I'm not the only one. I did have make contact with a few other people, and the reactions that other people got were quite interesting. Some would actually invite them in and try to be as helpful as possible. My response was quite differently. I mean, I after being there, I knew their job was to prosecute and to build information mm-hmm. for a prosecution. So basically, I didn't tell them anything. I just told them that, we'll get a lawyer and that's it. We're done.
Well, you have some experience with this.
Well, yeah, they're not there for your health. They're there to build a case.
Investigate and build a case. And that brings me to another point of the media and their involvement in it and how it could be skewed possibly. The ASCF recently posted on our website an opinion article from the Wall Street Journal on reconsidering the New York Times versus Sullivan case. And this case gave protection to the press against defamation lawsuits. This is back in the civil rights era. One of the senior, well-respected judges, Judge Silberman, has suggested in his dissenting opinion that, and I quote, "The times have changed and actual malice standard has effectively given the press a status above the Constitution that harms democracy." Mm. So if this case could be overturned, we possibly could have more hopefully honesty in the press. I don't know if that would happen, but maybe the ability to bring lawsuits against fake news. And I guess my question to you is, do you believe the media could be spinning the truth about these riots and rallies?
Absolutely. The media, I think, did not want to report on the huge attendance of the Trump rally that happened on January 6th. They needed a story that could overshadow that. And I think they got that. At the same token, I think it was an opportunity for them to really go after and to hurt the reputations of those that were involved in that. You know, interestingly enough, case in point, you know, the one of the candidates for Virginia governor, Amanda Chase, has been censured by the Virginia legislature for attending the rally. Mm. She wasn't at the Capitol, but she simply attended a rally. You know, and so now you've got the press that is using this as if it's an association of guilt for an insurrection that I don't think was really there. But you're right, the media is starting to, well, I guess it has been using its, you know, its ability to broadcast out their guilt and nefarious stories to harm a person's character. Mm-hmm. And in this case, you know, with the Virginia governor's race, obviously to sway a political outcome, you know, by harming somebody's reputation.
Mm. And that could, do you think that could make law enforcement more political by the press turning things?
Well, I think so. You know, I mean, we're heading more and more into a climate of divisiveness. You know, the so-called, you know, the middle ground, you know, the independents, it seems to be drying up. It seems to be when you talk to people, they're either one side or the other. You don't have, you know, this intelligent conversation. So I think the media is responsible a lot of, because if you look at the media, I mean, you're one of these people, you either watch the CNN or you watch the Fox News. You know, there's not a whole lot in between there. And quite frankly, if you watch one or the other, you know, we've gotten ourselves into a position that, okay, if you watch CNN, you're the Democratic liberal. If you watch Fox News, you're the Republican conservative. Right. And so no more do we have the middle ground people that we can go out to and try to win over politically, because usually they're the ones that sway elections one way or the other. It's getting more divisive.
I agree. You're labeled if you're watching CNN versus Fox. You're labeled if you're reading the New York Times versus the Wall Street Journal.
Absolutely.
I think yesterday I listened to an American of Asian descent, and I see that specifically because I think a lot of times we're causing division by not saying we're just all Americans. Instead, we break it into African Americans, Asian Americans, and
you know, that's it's an interesting thing because. I think a lot of us that were born in America, we don't have ourselves exposed to foreign cultures. I mean, I was very blessed. My wife was Russian. I spent time over in Russia.
Oh, wow.
You know, I know what socialism is. You don't want it. A lot of, you know, you mentioned the Asians people. You know, there's a lot of Asians that were there on January 6th that were protesting, you know, the Communist Party over in China. Mm. You know, a lot of Asian people have come to the United States because they don't want socialism. You know, they don't want an authoritative government. And, you know, a lot of them are fiercely independent and fiercely conservative.
Yes, I met two of them personally.
But they've seen it. You know, that's the thing. When you meet the people that have seen it, they've lived through it, they're very passionate about it and much more passionate about, you know, than myself, who actually grew up here in America.
Yes, we had that discussion, too, on another podcast as well, is that Thomas Kenney had spoke to us, and he was on the campaign trail as well. And he had two women that were from different countries that were much more passionate than Americans here that don't understand the coming from communism or socialism.
Oh gosh, yeah, I don't think they want to pick up roots and move again. They really don't. But yeah, if you're considering going in that direction, you really need to go experience it firsthand, and it's not a good thing.
But I was hearing her speak, and she was talking about identity politics and equality. Mm-hmm. And then she was asked some questions about the recent attacks on Asian Americans. There I am using that word.
Yeah.
But she said that is something that was not new. It's been happening for years. And years ago, law enforcement was saying that it was an economic issue, and that was at the time, the 2008 period. And she said now they're making it more of a political issue.
Well, absolutely. You know, I mean, Democrats have always tried to victimize a group and then try to woo them over to their side by playing victim politics. And it's worked with some groups. Some groups it hasn't worked. Actually, with some groups, they've kind of woken up to it and realized it's all been a trick. But, you know, politics always tries to reach out to different groups to woo them over to their side, you know, for votes. Right now, I think you went through an elections. I think you've got a lot of politicians who are analyzing which direction people have gone. And I think they're obviously reaching out to the Asian population and thinking that, you know, we didn't do so well in the Asian population in this last election. So let's victimize them. Let's make them feel like a victim. And then let's ride in on their white horse and see if we can't pull them over to our side. I don't think it's going to work, but it's a trick that's been used time and time again. You paint somebody as a victim, and then you paint yourself as the authoritative group that can correct the situation.
And in reality, like you're saying, it probably didn't work with the Asian population, because if they're coming from a communist country, they don't want to see that happen and the change here. That
the problem is that, you know, socialism comes in and woos you over with a common theme of power to the people. We're doing you a favor. We're going to give you all of this. And then once you consolidate the power, you know, you're marginalized and you're you're no longer important anymore. You know, the thing about it is, as long as your vote has weight in deciding the direction of your country and your politics, you'll always be respected. But once you've lose that, God help you, because once you've lost the respect, then they don't have to serve you. You have to serve them.
On our last podcast with Alan Dowd, as I mentioned before, he had said that political violence is not the way to political reform or a more just society. And certainly we need law enforcement to protect our freedoms and allow justice to be served. We are unfortunately seeing good law enforcement officers leaving because they can't do their job without politics or threat of defunding.
Right.
What would you, in your opinion, how can we encourage the moral law enforcement officers to continue the good fight for justice without feeling pressured by a culture that wants to defund the police?
You know, that's actually a very easy question, because, you know, after being in local politics for 6 years and having to deal directly with the police department, a police officer wants to feel respected by their supervisors and wants to be respected by the public at large. You know, I mean, when you really think about a police officer going into the professional field, you know, they don't do it for the money. I mean, a lot of times, you know, maybe they'll do it for benefits, because in the long term it does do well. But, you know, nobody wants to serve where they're not respected. Nobody wants to serve, and especially a public that despises them. And what has happened is that I know locally we've got an awful lot of really good police officers, and they chose to be where they are because they are respected. You know, the public does appreciate them, and you do have a local government that listens to them and really wants them to be successful in treating the public well. Now you have, for an example, you know, you brought up the Sullivan case. The media is saying, you know, defund the police. The police are the bad guys. Anytime there is an incident involving the police, the decision is already made. We have got that court case that's going through right now. You already have riots. You don't have a decision.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And the media has already whipped that up. It is very disheartening, because you do have a lot of police officers that feel as if they're being painted as the bad guy. That's not why they go into the profession. You know, they go in there to be the good guy. They're the one that goes in there to make sure bad things don't happen. And now they're doing good things, but they're being the bad guy for doing it. So
it's got to be very difficult.
We've got to turn that around.
It's got to be very difficult on them right now to go out and serve and yet not know what to expect on a daily basis.
Well, when you're serving and you're going by the rules, you're doing what you're told, you're doing what the law tells you to do, you're doing what the people have asked you to do, but you still end up the bad guy, and the reward is being taken from you. You're getting cuts. Your benefits are getting, you know, cut back, mm-hmm. and the media keeps beating up on you day in and day out. Mm-hmm. Basically, you say, you know, maybe I need to find another profession. And so what happens then, the new people come in, less experience, they make more mistakes, they possibly don't treat people as professionally as they should, and now your problem perpetually gets worse and worse and worse. As your age force lessens, the way they handle the situations, is the quality goes down immensely, immensely.
Those are good points. And I do want to take the time to thank our moral law enforcement officers who are putting themselves on the line every day to keep our community safe. And Jay, any final thoughts before we wrap up here?
Oh gosh, you know, yeah. You know, I'm still of a political mind, so you don't want to ask a politician, you know, for open mic time, they'll keep going on. But I really appreciate you having me on. And you know, when it comes to law enforcement, you know, be positive and thank your law enforcement officers. You know, a lot of the law enforcement officers don't go into profession to make people's lives miserable. They go into professionals. They go into the profession to make sure bad things don't happen and make sure we have good lives. They really are good people.
Yes. Thank you. And thank all of our law enforcement for your service. And I appreciate you coming on today with me.
Absolutely.
You can find this podcast on YouTube or Rumble just by typing in American Security Council Foundation. You can see all of our podcasts there, as well as if you go to our new website. It's been modernized and transformed. We'd really like you to check it out at www.ascf.us. While you're there, you can see all of our programs we have going on and upcoming events, and donate as well. Until next time, please stay safe.